morning and welcome to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Co-host Elaine Andrews is away. Today's topic came from a listener. Why aren't there more Alaska Native judges in the state judiciary? A quick answer is that the pipeline is just too small to propel many to judgeships. That significant trial experience is critical to prepare a judge for the role. So until there are more defenders and prosecutors, there won't be more judges from the Alaska Native community. And statistics tend to bear that out. Another response is that the very nature of the judicial system, two adversaries, the defense and prosecution, arguing in court in front of a judge who sits above it all on a raised platform, is somewhat dissonant. Traditional values emphasize consensus, sometimes reached in a circle. There are probably more reasons why we don't have Alaska Native judges represented in the judiciary today, but we'll hear from our three guests who know and care about the legal system and have found their place in it. We hope their thoughts and insights might help us answer the question of why Alaska does not have a single Alaska Native judge serving in the judiciary and what might change that. I'd like to welcome our three guests. We have Nicole Borromeo, the AFN Executive Vice President and General Counsel. Welcome, Nicole.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And we also have Sig Topcock, staff attorney for the Tribal Consortium Kawerik in Nome. Welcome, Sig.
Thank you for having me.
And also Chief Justice Joel Bolger with the Alaska Supreme Court. Welcome, Chief.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm glad to be here.
And I'd like to say something to our listeners. Your questions and comments are welcome throughout the hour. You can send an email or call us. The email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And the phone number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. And statewide, it is 1-888-353-5752. And I'll try to give those out many times during the hour so that if something comes up to you, please feel free to call and talk to our guests. And one other thing, on alaskapublic.org/hometown, we have a few links that are sort of interesting and relevant to today's program. Two of them are interviews with the one Alaska Native judge that Alaska has had, Roy Mattson in Kodiak. And it's a long interview by Art Snowden, and he does talk about how Western system of justice works with rural communities. He has some suggestions there. And then another interview is a really moving one with Nora Gwynn, who was, I think, a magistrate and maybe a district court judge when Bethel got a courthouse. Anyway, she is very eloquent about justice in rural communities. So if this topic interests you, you might find those conversations worth listening to. So let me get right to our guests. I wanted to give a bit more full introduction to each of them. I'm going to start with Sig. Sig Topcock is a Inupiaq, an attorney, and a Nome City Council member. She credits Oregon law professor in practice Howie Arnett with helping her survive law school and end up on the path she's on now. She credits her involvement in the Native American Law Students Association with helping her connect to other Native students and students interested in Indian law across the country, which has been invaluable to her as a new attorney working in the field. Currently, she serves as a staff attorney at a tribal consortium, Kawerik, which is located in Nome, which is her hometown, and she's also on the Nome City Council. Sig began her position with Kawerik in 2018, and through this position, she provides day-to-day legal services to the 20 tribes in the Bering Strait region. She assists tribes with elections, works with tribes on state child welfare cases involving tribal children, and helps tribes build up their tribal courts and police forces and assists with tribal employee personnel issues. My ultimate goal is to empower our tribal communities to function at their fullest capacity and to take over services from the state and federal governments. I strongly believe that our tribes know what is best for their tribal citizens, and I love being in a position where I can support tribes in taking the steps to carry out that vision. Her family is originally from Mary's Igloo on the Seward Peninsula. Her city council campaign highlighted the lack of Native representation in city leadership. She said officials either didn't listen to or failed to understand their Native constituents. Sig, I found that on the University of Oregon Law School website, and I just thought it was really interesting and wanted to share that with everyone. excuse me. Justice Bolger, a little bit more about your extensive background in Alaska. You were born and raised in Western Iowa, attended the University of Iowa, earning a Bachelor of Science in Economics in 1976 and a Juris Doctorate degree in 78. You came to Alaska as a VISTA attorney with Alaska Legal Services in Dillingham and then moved to the supervising attorney position with Alaska Legal Services in Kodiak. You served as an assistant public defender in Barrow and then returned to Kodiak to join a private firm. You worked as a private attorney for a number of years. And let me just turn this page. I think the thing about your background that is so interesting is how much of it was in rural Alaska. let's see, including 14 years as a municipal attorney for the Kodiak Island Borough. And let's see, you have extensive court experience, which makes you an excellent guest for today. You were appointed to the Supreme Court by Governor Sean Parnell in 2013. Your retirement will coincide. I think you're going to retire in June, and that will coincide with the end of your three-year term as Chief Justice. And let me see. I think you were also the first person to be appointed to all four levels of the Alaska judiciary. So anyway, a long, a distinguished career here, not just in the urban centers of Alaska, but also in rural Alaska. And then finally, let me just give a little bit more background on Nicole. what I found, Nicole, on the AFN website is that you were hired as general counsel for the AFN in February of 2014, that you are a Doyon Shoil holder, hold a bachelor's degree from the University of Alaska Anchorage and a Juris Doctorate degree from the University of Washington School of Law. Prior to joining AFN, you served as a law clerk to the Honorable Judge Patricia Collins, retired, and worked as an associate in the Anchorage office of Sanofsky Chambers, and that you were raised in McGrath and now reside in Anchorage. So welcome to you all, and I just want to say how pleased we are to be able to offer your thoughts and insights to our listening audience here for Justice Alaska. I'm just going to jump in, and my first question was really the one that a listener gave us, which was, why don't you have a show on why we don't have more Alaska Native judges? And the person who suggested it said, what you hear is that the pipeline is pretty small. And I found a statistic that something like 38,000 people graduated from law school in 2020, but only 117 were Alaska Native or American Indian. So that would suggest that the pipeline is small. But let's talk a little bit about that from what each of you might know about that. I'm going to start with you, Chief. Tell us what your sense of the pipeline is and how that might be affecting our ability to have Alaska Native judges.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. To a certain extent, it's kind of sad for me to be having this conversation. When I started my career in Kodiak, I was practicing before a Native judge, Roy Madsen. I tried cases against a prosecutor named Greg Razzo, who's still practicing law with Cook Inlet Region. And I also practiced in front of a number of Alaska Native magistrates. And so to be in a situation where we have no Alaska Native judge on the bench here, it's kind of distressing. But another issue with the pipeline that you mentioned is just the low number of Alaska Native members of the Alaska Bar Association. I think there's only about 50 active members of the Alaska Bar Association who identify as Alaska Native, only about 2% of the membership. And so it's a matter for concern, but that to me seems to be a major driver of this current situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to go to you, Nicole. What are your thoughts about why we don't have more Alaska Native judges serving at this point?
Thanks for the question, Kathleen. In my estimation, it's primarily because of our early exposure to different legal careers. And speaking for myself, I'm a third generation board chair of my village corporation as well. I was brought early on into the boardroom with my grandmother and my mother. I'm very comfortable in that world, in the policy world. And we often have a calling that we feel internally and is externally placed on us by other tribal members and Native entities that want us to come back and give back to our people. So if we are able to also create a path to the bench that we see early on as Alaska Native students, that would help, in my opinion, siphon off some of the Alaska Native lawyers that come back to the state and become barred to pursue the judicial path instead of just the corporate or nonprofit or tribal path.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, do you have any sense why people, Alaska Native legal professionals, may not join the bar? They may be qualified to join the bar, but don't. Do you have any sense of that? Is it not maybe seen as significant to them, or any thoughts about that?
No, not because it's not seen as significant, mainly because it's I think it's because of the career path that they choose, which is going in-house sometimes with their tribe or with a corporation or nonprofit, and a bar license is not always required to do that type of work, especially mm-hmm. if one becomes a chief executive officer or a chief operating officer, any of those C-suite type of jobs. You don't have to be barred to do that. So some Alaska Natives go to law school not for the purpose of ever practicing. And I think that's okay to acknowledge and accept. Everyone has their own path to walk in life, and not all roads lead to Rome, which in this case is becoming a barred attorney and practicing either in court or doing transactional work. So it really just depends on what the individual wants to use their law degree for. And like I said, not every Alaska Native law student intends to practice law with it.
Mm-hmm. It does seem that we have just a tremendous higher education initiative among the Alaska Native community. I worked for a while at UAA and just, you know, met so many students, you know, pursuing higher education and ambitions for, you know, future careers. And so it does seem to me that there are many, many people pursuing higher education, but whether or not, you know, they have this in their sights that, yes, someday I want to be a prosecutor or a defense attorney or a judge. Who knows? I don't know. You're right. Everybody has to walk their own path. How about you, Sig? You grew up in Nome, I think, or you consider that your hometown. why do you think young people pursuing a legal education actually don't end up going into the judiciary? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly complex, and I think there's a lot of pinches along the pipeline that we run into. And with law school in particular and becoming a lawyer, not only do you have to complete undergrad and get your bachelor's degree, but then you have to take the LSAT, go to law school, pass the bar exam. And so there's a lot of points along the way that I think can be really frustrating and intimidating, that can be a lot of hoops to jump through, that cost a lot of money, that can dampen the number of Alaska Native folks we see going through this, these processes and these educational institutions. And for me personally, I really appreciate what Nicole Baromeo was saying, because for me, when I went to law school, I didn't really want to be in the courtroom. I wanted to work for my tribe. I wanted to come home to Nome and empower our tribes to really focus on restorative justice, because I see our people getting stuck in the Western legal system, and it just becomes a revolving door. And a lot of our young people, unfortunately, end up having some kind of interaction with the Western legal system, and often it's not very good, not positive outcomes. And so focusing on restorative justice, helping our people get back up on their feet, you know, I think that's really critical in order for us to really kind of move beyond that and get the education, the Western education needed to operate in these Western institutions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have an email that came from a listener, and I'm going to read it. Excuse me. this listener notes that the George Floyd trial wraps up today, and so particularly today we can't help but reflect on what happens when someone who is not of the community, who doesn't know the community, who doesn't appreciate its history or culture for that matter, is the one who is policing community members, advocating for them, or judging, or for that matter, jailing them. For example, we seem to rely on importing out of state workers to fill our police departments in rural Alaska. What changes can we make? What incentives can we offer in order to provide more effective policing, those outcomes geared to the community's best interests? So that's what today's topic brought up in one listener's mind. I might just go ahead and give each of you an opportunity to respond to that. It is a big day. I mean, the George Floyd trial is being watched, you know, probably globally. And it does speak to the idea of people who don't know the community policing the community and as this listener says, maybe advocating for them or making judgments about them. So let me start with you, Chief. Just some response to that.
Well, I'm no expert on policing, mm-hmm. but I do know that our justice system is really focused on ascertaining the truth and resolving problems and conflict. In order to do that, we need the trust of people from the community, people who serve on juries, people who are the parties in legal disputes, people who come into court as witnesses to a certain event. Those people all have to trust that they will be treated fairly. And when there is, a hurdle, a racial or ethnic hurdle to that participation, why that makes the job more difficult. Likewise, it's important for attorneys and judges to really understand the situations that they're trying to advocate for or judge about. I could tell you a longer story about defending a case in Utqiagvik, where the whole outcome of the case had to do with the jury actually just understanding what my client was saying in Inupiaq, just understanding the words that he was trying to get across. It can be very critical. I'm repeating myself a bit, but communication is key to the process. And when there's barriers to that communication, the process just doesn't work as well.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to you, Nicole. Any thoughts about, just in light of the George Floyd case and this idea of who's actually making the decisions in some of these communities? Do you have any response to that?
The Chief Justice said it so eloquently, even though he said he's not an expert in policing. So I'm not going to add anything to what he said there. But what I always try and get across when I approach the legislature, when we're making laws and policies there, is that it's not only important to draft a good law. You have to have a solid bench that can then interpret the law. So I'm going to say that they go hand in hand and just briefly add that to what the Chief Justice said. You do have to have a court, though, that does understand the community. And sometimes it can be just as simple as understanding what a person is saying, like the Chief Justice said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know in the Nora Gwynn interview that I told folks we have a link to, she talked about sometimes speaking Yupik in the courtroom so that explaining things in Yupik because words don't always translate all that well, and that was something that she could bring to that role. How about you, Sig? Any response to that, to this idea of the eminence of the George Floyd case today and this idea of who's representing and advocating for and judging individuals in communities?
Yeah, and I'll say that that's something that the city of Nome has really been grappling with these last few years. So we've been trying to think of other ways that we can bring our own community members and our Alaska Native people, who are a significant portion of our population but not represented in the police force. How do we create that pathway for our youth, in particular Alaska Native youth, to rise up into these positions? So thinking about cadet programs, about developing relationships between law enforcement and our youth outside of getting into trouble, because that's definitely going to tinge and shape your relationship with certain people or institutions when you're only interacting with them when you get into trouble. So I think that's so important to really grow our own and bring our youth up, our Alaska Native youth, into these roles.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Sig, I have a question from a listener. Barb wants to ask you specifically this question. She says, the pipeline was described as small. This shows the system transformation needs to occur across systems. What are your thoughts and or suggestions? So is that clear enough for you, Sig?
Yeah. And I appreciate Barb bringing up that question and prompting us to focus, because again, like thinking about these different institutions that interact, I mean, it's so important to have Alaska Native leadership in city council as judges, as police officers, as mayors, we need to see ourselves in these roles. And when we don't see ourselves in those spaces and taking on those roles and having the respect in those different institutions, it's, you know, why would we even bother to try to get the education to set ourselves up to be in those spaces if we don't feel like we're heard, if we don't feel like we're taken seriously and that we're not represented? So I think that that's so important. It's what we're trying to work on really hard in Nome and thinking about a lot. And so I can't stress that enough. Seeing somebody who looks like you in a position of power, same for teachers. If we look at the healthcare system, the teachers, the education system, we don't see a lot of our people in those spaces. And what does that do for our youth?
Mm-hmm.
I grapple with that a lot.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a tiny break right now, but we'll be back in just a minute. You are listening to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. I'm just going to reintroduce our guests here quickly. Our topic is the dearth of Alaska Native judges on the Alaska State Judiciary. At the moment, we don't have any. We have had at least one in the past, Superior Court Judge Roy Mattson in Kodiak. But right now, we don't have any. And so we're discussing it, and our guests are Nicole Borromeo, AFN's Executive Vice President and General Counsel, also Sib Topcock, who is the staff attorney for the Tribal Consortium Kawerik in Nome, and also a Nome City Council member, and Joel Bolger, who is the Chief Justice for the Alaska Supreme Court. Welcome our callers to join us in the conversation. The email is hometown@alaskapublic.org, and the phone number to call is 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752, and that's statewide. I think what we want to do now is talk about maybe some of the attempts, some of the ongoing efforts to change the situation. Before we jump into that, I do have a question. I know I have heard that there are many Alaska Native magistrates, and that early in the state's history, there were more of them than there are today. And I just want to know, and I'll start with you, Chief, tell us a little bit about the history of the magistrate system. You mentioned, you know, arguments with them, appearing before them. But is it different today than it was historically? Was that one avenue to have people from the community sitting in that key role as a magistrate? So Chief, let's go to you. A little bit on the history and what has changed.
Well, that is a really good question. And I would say that it's an interesting system that has changed a bit with the demographics of the state. Early on in the 1960s, the legislature set up the position of magistrate, and because the population was more rural at that time, there were more rural magistrates. And so, and because the population of the rural areas was more predominantly Native, there were more Native magistrates. We've always had a system with rural magistrates throughout the state, but the locations where magistrates are located have, proportionately lost population, and the urban areas have gained in population. And so the number of magistrates in rural Alaska has changed over the years. We still have several Native magistrates, but I would say that I can think of one or two in urban areas, and that's it. And so I would say that just the way that the population has changed has also influenced the changes in that system.
Mm-hmm. And how about, Nicole, anything to, you may not have background in this, or you may, I don't know, but any thoughts about this idea of the historical kind of large presence of Alaska Native magistrates, and now it's more diminished numbers today?
I actually don't have any background on this, so I'll pass.
Sure, no problem. And Sig, how about you? You're in rural Alaska. Do you remember Alaska Native magistrates in your town or your community?
Yeah, well, I will say I really wasn't paying close attention as a kid, but now I really appreciate we do have Pam Smith, who's Alaska Native and one of our magistrates, and I just appreciate so much what she brings to the work that she does and her relationship with the people who come in front of her. I think that makes a huge difference in our community to have Pam in the position, Magistrate Smith in the position that she is.
Mm-hmm. And so I think we did a good job of talking about what the cost of not having Alaska Native judges or magistrates in positions of authority in rural communities and even in urban areas, because, you know, the saying is that Anchorage is the largest village. You know, we have many, many Alaska Native people living in Anchorage, but not having those Alaska Native judges. I think we've kind of covered that, but I thought we could move to, if you all agree, to kind of a discussion of what have the efforts been to change this. And those could be in the school system, in the judicial system, maybe in the Native corporate world, efforts to change that. So Chief Justice, let me go to you. What can you tell us about what the state judiciary has tried to do to facilitate the movement of Alaska Native law professionals through the judiciary?
Well, Kathleen, the court system has been involved in this issue for many years. And I'll just give you a little outline, kind of from cradle, I don't want to say cradle to grave, but we have really programs at all levels, right up through practicing attorneys. We have a program called the Justice for All Art Contest that promotes interest in justice and diversity for elementary and secondary school children. We have the Color of Justice program. I know Nicole is going to present at the program this week, which is being held at Mount Edgecombe, and it brings together high school students from across the state to promote support for diversity and interest in careers in the justice system. I noticed that on the program today at Mount Edgecombe, there's presentations from a couple of law school recruiters from University of Washington and also from Gonzaga. So right there is an effort to try to bring these Native students into law school and law careers. We have a program called Supreme Court Live, where we bring the Supreme Court to high schools across the state for oral arguments. We have college career fair type presentations. Three local Anchorage judges participated in a career fair presentation on February 26th at UAA. We supported Seattle University when they set up a satellite campus in conjunction with Alaska Pacific, and it primarily allowed Seattle University students to spend their third year of law school in Alaska. They no longer are operating the satellite campus, but they have announced a new program that'll be a 3.5-year online program, again, to make it easier for Alaska students to remain in the state and to remain in the state after graduation. We also hold continuing legal education programs with the Alaska Judicial Council and the court system to talk about how the judicial selection system works and to educate attorneys and encourage them to submit judicial applications. So that's just a few of the programs we have underway right now to try to promote interest in legal careers.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, I was wondering if with AFN, is there an initiative there or a drive to propel people toward the judiciary, or as you kind of said in the beginning, everybody has their own path. But I wondered, is it something of concern with AFN that the judiciary has no Alaska Native judges?
Absolutely. And we've been doing a really good job recently of tracking the applicants to all levels of the state courts in Alaska. And we remain hopeful that we are going to see an Alaska Native Supreme Court justice in our time. Greg Razzo, if you're out there listening, you would make an excellent justice on the Supreme Court. And it's just a shame that you're not going to get to serve with Chief Justice Bolger, who's retiring. In addition also to all of the different avenues that the Chief Justice outlined, Color of Justice being one of them, and that's one program that I personally have been participating in since 2008 when I clerked for Judge Tricia Collins down in Juneau. An excellent opportunity is at the law school juncture, and that is to steer graduating students into a clerkship. So they get into state courts and federal courts early on, right out of law school, so that they can preserve this as one of the career paths that are open to them going forward. That is something that I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to do after I graduated from the University of Washington Law School, and owe so much to Judge Collins, who's now retired.
Mm-hmm. I am going to go to you, Sig, but just one moment. I'm going to take a call into the program just because when listeners call in, I hate to break the flow, but I just want to see what her question is and see if we can answer it for her. So just one second. I'd like to welcome Ethel from Sterling, and you have a question about issues along the way. Are you addressing the pipeline question?
No, I'm not addressing the pipeline question. My name is Arnaidur. Most people know me as Ethel. The last time I saw Chief Justice Bolger, I was trying not to get whiplash between Associate Justices Winfrey's and Stowers flashing questions at me in front of the state Supreme Court. I grew up in Wainwright. I have practiced in front of the Superior Court in Barrow, and I have dealt with the Utqiagvik Tribal Court or the Native Village of Barrow Tribal Court. And I'm now retired, but at the same time, while I'm listening to all of you and really appreciating the input and the thought and the analysis that went into the preparation for this program, I'm wondering what issues really have we identified other than a pipeline, other than our own individual personal interests, because I really have no interest in criminal defense, thank you very much, or prosecution, thank you very much. But I did grow up in a village that experienced the cultural transition from an Umeliginuk governing adjudicatory body to the local village magistrates to a state of Alaska imposed criminal justice system. And so I've gone from the first banishment that I knew of, Umeliginuk dictating the terms of a homegrown divorce, to being someone who argued cases back to back in front of the state Supreme Court. And I have not really heard anything about what issue is there really, aside from our presence, in terms of the state judiciary, in terms of the state judicial system. It seems to me that there is a presence lacking, but what is it that the judicial system, aside from the presence of individual cultures, is missing? Is the presence of an Alaska Native voice on the judicial bench the magistrates, leading to some kind of lack in terms of the judicial results that are achieved or are being sought.
Okay.
I haven't heard anyone really address that. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Ethel. And I guess I was thinking that we might get around to a little bit of that. I know when I spoke with some attorneys in preparation for this program, some Alaska Native attorneys said there may be a discomfort being in this system, that it's not natural. And I'm not, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know whether in, you know, village adjudication systems that existed before the Western legal system came, that there might not have been advocates there. I have no idea. But, you know, some have said it's not a comfortable place to be. The Western judiciary is not a comfortable place to be. And I guess, you know, when I spoke with Sig a little bit about her law school experience, and some of that emerged there. So, Sig, I'm going to go there now and invite you to sort of tell us a little bit. I mean, you did say, I almost dropped out a million times. It was so hard, not just because the work is hard, but because of being an Indigenous person, being a spokesperson for the whole Indigenous world sometimes, you know, just the difficulties that you encountered. So let me turn it to you, Sig, and talk a little bit about what going to law school was like.
Yeah, so thank you. And I really appreciate Ethel's question, too. So my law school experience, for me personally, and again, I will say not every Indigenous law student will go through this, but for me, I struggled a lot because I was the only Native law student, and oftentimes was doing more education of my peers and my professors about Indigenous people and about federal Indian law than sometimes I felt like I was learning myself, and I was there to be a student and to learn and how, figure out how to operate within the system so that I could empower other Alaska Native people to come behind me. And so, for example, like your first year of law school, you have to take a, you know, a set course load. You have to take constitutional law, criminal law, property law, civil procedure, those types of classes. And I found often there was cases that related to Indigenous people, whether they were, you know, oftentimes older cases. But at the same time, it could be very hard to work through those cases, and especially as the only Native student in a system that was very adversarial. For me, growing up as an Indigenous woman, it's more about consensus, building consensus, and arguing with each other, avoiding conflict, and not avoiding conflict in the sense that you just ignore conflict, but living your life in such a way that you don't create conflict. And to me, the Western legal system and law school in particular didn't mesh with that. It felt very much at odds, and so there would be times where we'd have cases, like in my criminal law course, there's a case that's very, very well known. I'm blanking on the name, but it's about a Native family back in the 60s who had a child, a toddler, with an abscessed tooth. The tooth becomes infected, the child dies, and the state prosecutes the family for the death of their toddler and not seeking medical treatment. The problem was that these parents were afraid of going to these institutions, these Western medical institutions, because of the removal of our children. Oftentimes it would be used as an excuse to take away children. Sometimes you'd bring your kid and you wouldn't know if you would ever see them again. And for me, this touches really close to home because my grandmother was adopted out from Nome in 1940 when she was just 4 years old to a white family in Oregon. And again, they loved her very dearly, but she faced a lot of discrimination and racism. People would call her horrible things and treat her very differently because of the color of her skin. And so things like this come up constantly in law school for Indigenous students, especially when you're not at a law school that has a lot of other Native students or has a program specific to federal Indian law. So I would really love to see a tribal law school someday, whether that's in Alaska or elsewhere. I think we desperately need that. We need spaces where we can grow our own attorneys into systems that, that makes sense to us and supports us in that journey rather than us feeling like the outsider constantly.
Mm-hmm. we've lost Ethel. I hope, Ethel, I didn't mean to not answer your question. I thought that you might be getting at this sense of discomfort, and I had heard it in Sig's discussion about law school. So I thought it was worth bringing that up. And there was, well, we really do need to take another break right now. When we come back, Sig, I'm hoping we can talk a little bit about the Bar Association here and its emerging initiative about trying to understand this issue a little bit more. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Just to remind you, we're talking about why we don't have any Alaska Native judges in the state judiciary. And our guests are Nicole Borromeo, the AFN Executive Vice President and General Counsel, Sig Topcock, the staff attorney for the Tribal Consortium Kowarik in Nome, and Joel Bolger, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court. you know, one more point. And actually, if we have any more people who want to ask questions or send us an email, feel free. It's hometown@alaskapublic.org, and also the number is 550-8433, and statewide it is 1-888-353-5752. And let me see. Sig, I just wanted to touch on one more thing you talked about, which is amazing to me. It was the doctrine of discovery that you studied in law school, which was really a justification for colonization. And that must have been somewhat discomforting, and perhaps why you think a tribal law school might be a good idea. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So in my property law class, one of the fundamental is the Cherokee Trilogy is kind of fundamental to the to federal Indian law as a body. And so part of that relies very heavily on the doctrine of discovery, which was an international principle basically stating that if you were, again, this is me oversimplifying, but essentially a European Christian nation, you had a superior right to land and resources over whoever might be living on that land, assuming that they weren't Christian. So they were kind of seen as lesser than, and therefore had restricted rights to the land. They couldn't, you know, buy and sell land, for instance. You had to, whoever the colonizer was that came in had a superior right under the doctrine of discovery and to buy that land, essentially. And so Alaska was actually sold kind of under this principle. So Russians came in, spent time in parts of Alaska, but really hadn't been in all of Alaska or established forts across Alaska. But the Doctrine of Discovery was then kind of the foundation for the Treaty of Session by which Russia sold Alaska to the United States. And so it's very frustrating to go into law school to hear these kinds of legal arguments being made about who your ancestors are and who you are as a person, that you at a point and what it sometimes still feels like in the present are just not considered on the same level as Christian European nations or other groups of people. And that's really frustrating and, and disheartening to go through.
Yeah. I wonder, Chief or Nicole, if you have any thoughts on, you all went through that same process that she went through, but perhaps didn't have the same reaction or did have the same reaction to some of the learnings in law school. What about you, Nicole?
Can you repeat the question? I'm not sure that I'm understanding Sig's answer compared to the question, so I want to make sure that I give the right answer.
Right. I think what I was trying to get at and what I heard from Sig was the discomfort that she felt going through law school, studying some of the Western legal principles that suggested, justified colonialization, I guess, colonization. And anyway, if it's not significant for you, don't worry about it. I just thought it might have struck you too when you were in law school.
Oh, it definitely did strike me. I think it strikes every Native American law student that goes through and reads the Marshall Trilogy and the Doctrine of Discovery and just really how the early courts referred to Native people. And It is uncomfortable, but there are several aspects of law school that are uncomfortable. Law school is not something that everyone does because it's not easy. And to get there, you have to go through undergrad, you have to take the LSAT, and you have to get accepted to law school. And by the time that you match with a school and are enrolled in your first year, there are just really the best and brightest from across the country. So that can be a very daunting experience. And graduating law school is no small feat. I don't want to leave the listeners with the impression that there aren't really excellent Alaska Native lawyers in the state, because there are number of them, not as many numbers as we want, but there are partners in law firms and private practice. There are Alaska Natives that are serving in both the federal and state government as assistant district attorneys and as U.S. Assistant attorneys as well. I'm thinking of Sharice from Bristol Bay. She is at the DOJ right now, and others that have chosen the path of executive management through the Native corporations and through the nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So just because you don't see us on the bench right now doesn't mean that we're not there. But this is a focus area that collectively we need to get better at on the state, is putting Alaska Natives on the bench. And that requires us as Alaska Native attorneys to apply to be a judge, and for the judicial council experience to be a positive one, and then ultimately for the governor to opt to put a Native on the bench. Mm-hmm. So ultimately the decision does rest with the governor, and we had a lot of positive movement, particularly in the last administration, where Governor Walker was looking at a more inclusive bench. You see more women appointed to the bench, more people of color generally appointed to the bench. So that's the type of foresight that it takes to get an Alaska Native on the bench.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see the clock ticking down, so I want to go to Sig to tell us a little bit about the initiative within the Alaska Bar Association. I think it's just in its formative stages, but can you help us understand that?
Yeah, so we currently have a diversity initiative that we're in resolution form that we're currently working on. If folks are interested in learning more, it should be up on the bar's website soon. And we'll also be discussed at our May meeting, which is May 6th and 7th. I believe it's slated for the afternoon of the 6th right now. But essentially what we are hoping to do is create a commission made up of Black, Indigenous, and people of color who are underrepresented, both within the membership of the bar, but also obviously as judges on the bench, to really dig into what are the barriers that BIPOC people face in coming into this profession, and how can we as the Bar Association make changes to better accommodate other points of view, other ways of thinking and being, knowledge systems, and really encourage and build space for BIPOC people, because we know that when we're diverse and when we have accurate representation, we do better and we have a more fair and more just system. So this commission will do a study over the course of the next year, hopefully, and present a report to the Board of Governors that we will determine how to take further action on.
So that's something to watch for, an initiative coming out of the Alaska Bar Association. We do have a question from Robin, who wants to know, she appreciates the discussion about education and getting people to and through law school and into their, you know, clerkships and things like that. But her question is, could the state court system learn from Alaska Native justice systems? Are there principles that could go both ways there? And also, could state and tribal courts work together? And I'm going to go to the chief on this. I think there are probably areas where there are coordinated efforts. I remember we had a program on the Kenaitse state judge and tribal judge working together. So I think it is happening. But can I go to you, Chief, and tell us a little bit about your thoughts from your extensive time in rural Alaska? Are there principles from the Alaska Native, if you want to say their system of following and ordering their system, if there are things that we could learn in the state judicial system?
Well, thank you, Kathleen, because even though I said before this was a distressing situation, there is in this topic, a bit of hope, because we've had a number of people that have gone from tribal systems to help out in the Alaska court system and have utilized the skills they learned in the tribal systems to enhance the Alaska court system. Mike Jackson served as a tribal judge in Cake and also served as a court system magistrate for 25 years. And he was especially known for using circle sentencing techniques to enhance the community's participation in the sanctions that he imposed. Deb O'Gara was a tribal judge from Southeast who accepted a position as a magistrate in Petersburg and served until she resigned recently. Kimberly Sweet is the judge that you're thinking about from Kenai, who served on a tribal court and then jointly served in a therapeutic court program with the court system, and now is employed as a magistrate judge in Kenai. So she's able to use the kind of alternative dispute resolution principles that she applied in tribal court to Alaska court system customers as well. I think Darlene Johnson from Amonic may have been considering a similar role. She's a court system magistrate who is from Amonic, but I'm not quite sure if she is also a tribal judge at this time. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm saying is, yes, there are opportunities there, and there have been people who have kind of bridged this gap.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Nicole? Do you think there are lessons, or and Sig, I'll ask you also, just lessons that could go from the Alaska Native communities into the judicial system, the state's judicial system? I guess principles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, I have the difficult job of following Chief Justice Bolger, because who immediately came to mind was Mike Jackson down in Cake. And the circle sentencing, the restorative justice system upon which our cultures rest on would be extremely beneficial to the non-Native, more Western adversary form of justice. That form, the restorative justice, is focused on making the individual and the community whole again, because we don't often see infractions as just between the parties involved, because there is a peripheral that becomes impacted by the crime or the offense as well. So more restorative justice opportunities would be extremely beneficial, but at the same time, we are seeing them. And a lot of times you see this play out in drug courts, run by Keith Levy down in Juneau. He was doing an excellent job there and really borrowing a lot of these principles and weaving them into the practice.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Sig, your thoughts on this same question?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why I'm really passionate and love working with tribal courts and doing tribal court development in this region, because of that focus on restorative justice. So you look at the Western system, and not always, but oftentimes it's kind of premised on this punitive justice approach where locking people up or fining them is expected to be a deterrent from engaging in that disruptive behavior again. But on the tribal court side, we really focus on digging at the root of why people acted the way that they do. And oftentimes you'll find that, you know, they've had generations of trauma that they're working through. And so they've used substances to cope, or they've engaged in this behavior to try to cope with whatever it is that's going on in their lives. And so if we can come at it from, you know, another angle and get them the, you know, the assistance that they need, address the underlying issues, we see much better outcomes. And so I teach Intro to Tribal Government at the local high school, and I will say this is what the high school students often connect most with is when we do a mock circle. It just makes intuitive sense to them. I think that, of course, we would pull in the community. Of course, we would pull in families and provide supports to the person who got into trouble so that they can stay out of trouble. And so I'm really hoping that we can do more joint jurisdiction work in this region. Judge DiBenedetto is fantastic. I always appreciate talking with him and having him come out to talk with the high school kids, because I really hope that we can grow these connections, these relationships, and do more work together around restorative justice.
Mm-hmm. And one question we haven't quite touched on, and I'm going to go to you, Chief, the connections the coordination. Well, I guess we have touched on it with these joint courts, but it was the idea that I was thinking about. Roy Madsen in his interview said that he saw a place for optional courts, but he didn't actually see them as being part of the judiciary. And it almost looks like we've moved past that to some joint opportunities. Would you say that's the case, that we've actually moved beyond this idea of an optional outside of the judiciary court system?
Well, I would just say that this is a topic that is constantly changing. And I think as social conditions change, as budgets change, that you will see further developments in this area. And I think that the court system, as long as I've been part of the system for the last 24 years, we've been constantly trying to open up new avenues to coordinate with the tribal court system and with tribal councils statewide. We have a rule that especially allows alternative sentencing practices to be considered in our courts. We have programs where we try to develop circle sentencing programs in Southeast, in Galena area, in Chistochina. It's just been a constant effort to try to find ways to relate and communicate while allowing native communities to take responsibility for their own justice system.
Mm-hmm. We have just about a minute left. We have someone who's been following the program who wanted to say a couple of things. His name is it looks like Charlie, but that any law student would show indignation to these colonial laws, but that they would, to get through law school and to pass the bar, they would have to suppress those. And he saw this as perhaps an invisible systemic racist pattern. That was one view he had. And he also suggested that that the Kenaitse tribe was guilty of separating Inupiat grandchildren from their Inupiat grandmother. So he suggested that this discussion was just too much on the surface. So, you know, it's just tells you how complicated and difficult this topic is. So we have just a couple seconds left. And I'm just going to say, go to Sig. What would you like our audience to be thinking about?
Just encourage young folks to go to law school, support anybody that you come in contact with, connect them with resources, just, you know, be there to listen to them.
And how about you, Chief?
I don't really have anything to add. Thank you all for listening today. This is an important topic.
Thank you so much. Well, we are out of time, and I'd like to thank our callers and listeners today, and also Nicole Borromeo, the Vice President and General Counsel for AFN, Sig Topcock, the Staff Attorney for Kowarik, and Joel Bulger, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court. Next Monday on Hometown Alaska, we tackle another listener request. How can Anchorage in Alaska meet the need for quality early childhood education? We know the benefits. What's keeping us from creating the opportunities? Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Emmert was our audio engineer today. Thanks for joining us on Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.